please help me welcome to the stage Tyler from Cypress, California.
My name is Tyler, I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Bill for having me out here and for you guys for being willing to listen to my crap tonight. I like his disclaimer, you know, so if I don't do very well, you can't blame it on him. I like that. No, I don't know, I had the pleasure of meeting Bill at a retreat recently, by the book guys put on a retreat. We're from Southern California, and we go anywhere and everywhere to chase our recovery, and that's where we ended up, and I believe that I've made a new friend, and hopefully many others tonight. I'll get something out of the way real quick. I don't like doing this. I don't like speaking. I feel my conviction and where I feel called is one-on-one at a treatment center in the trenches with alcoholics, one-on-one, sitting there drinking a pot of coffee, smoking a couple packs of cigarettes and going through the steps. I mean, that's where I feel called and convicted to do. But however, you end up doing a lot of that stuff, and then eventually you end up having to do a lot of this stuff. So that's why I'm here tonight. We drove up this morning. We left about 10 o'clock. We said 9, but of course we left by 10. Took about 3 hours, got up here at 1, and then we just cruised around Visalia, went to the mall, had some hot dogs on a stick. We just hung out, man. And, a big reason, my inspiration for being willing and wanting to come up here was, I guess, to see recovery happen tonight. I got to see a person be transformed. From the car ride up here, a good friend, Ray, he's from up here, and he had a lot of amends to do. And we came up early. He got to knock out a bunch of those amends, man, and just to look in his eyes, before the meeting, you can tell he's a different man, and I get to see Alcoholics Anonymous work one more time. That's what I did. I mean, I could sit in a ton of these meetings all day long, but for me, I like to watch that little change that you see in people's eyes, man. And for the newcomers, people who are new to recovery or, coming back to recovery, I welcome you, whether it's your first time or your 20th time. I mean, I don't, it makes no difference to me. I mean, you're welcome, and I'm grateful that our program was designed by people who could not stay sober. It wasn't designed by people who got sober on their first try. And so what it reminds me of is for the people who do keep coming back, in and out, you're welcome here. You belong here probably more than the rest of us. And that this program is for you. This program is for people who cannot stay sober. And I found a home here, and I found something else here that I'm going to try to explain. And if you're anything like me, I hope that you could find the same kind of, I hope you could find what I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. My story is simple. I'm going to try not to spend too much time on it. I come from a single mother household. I never felt lack of love. I was never beaten and locked in closets and thrown around. I mean, I never felt any of that stuff. If that's part of your story, my heart goes out to you, but I didn't experience that, you know. We were dirt broke, but my mom, I mean, she was a hustler. Went to school full-time, worked full-time. She was the PTA mom, the soccer mom, the softball mom, the Girl Scout leader, the Boy Scout leader. She was very selfless. I started learning these principles in Alcoholics Anonymous from her at a young age. My mom has a mother that walks around. I got the brand new, Vans and my brand new clothes and Nike ears. And, I'm looking good at school. And, I fit in. And my mom's, she's going to work in full-time school with broken pumps, and her clothes are all beat up. And she's just very selfless, self-sacrificing mom. And I was told that my secrets are my sickness. So here tonight, I have to tell myself, and if I don't, I get to walk out of here a sick man. And so the truth of my story, prior, before drugs and alcohol and anything ever came into my system, I have bouts of anger, I have rage, and what would happen is when that mom would try to step to the plate and be the mother, the father, the disciplinary, the friend, trying to put on all the hats, man, I would be abusive to that woman. And I would abuse her emotionally, mentally, physically, any way I had to get what I wanted. And if you guys think that it makes me proud to stand up here and look at a room full of women and look in their eyes and say that I laid hands on my mom, and you think that makes me proud and makes me a big man to be able to say that, you got me all wrong. I say that because I don't want to live that way anymore, and I found a way that I don't have to. That's what I'm doing here tonight. As I do, I despise the man that I once was, and I find my ass off to not have to live that way ever again. And that's what I'm doing here. A lot of people think it's about alcohol, but for me, it's about a whole new way of living. It's about a whole new way. The stuff that I was born with, the deep down depressions, the anger, the rage, that fury that goes on deep in my gut, all that stuff has been removed and I get to live free today. So if I have to drive a couple hours to come talk, I'm going to do it. If I have to sit on, across the table from a drunk, you know, one-on-one all through my weekends, I'm going to do it because it pays for me. I don't get a paycheck, but I get to be free. So that's what I'm doing here. You know, I'm not I mean, you guys don't have to answer the question or raise your hand at all, but I mean, just think, how many of us had goals and hopes and dreams when we grew up? I mean, I remember being a little kid, and I'm going to be a big time businessman, or I'm going to be a marine biologist, and I'm going to be 25 years old, the white picket fence, living down in Mission Viejo, the wife, the kids, college degree, all that stuff, man. And I had a list of goals and hopes and dreams. And then I had this list of stuff I'm never going to do. Never going to stab nobody, never going to put my hands on a woman, never going to go to jail, I'm never going to drink, never going to put that white stuff up my nose. I had this list of stuff I was absolutely never, ever, ever going to do. So why am I standing here tonight? You know, what I found is that I'm an alcoholic. And for me, something happened when I put that juice in my system. It lights a little fire inside, deep down in my gut where I live, that becomes more important to anything in my life. More important than the college degree. More important than those tears running down mom's face. More important than my relationship with my family, my friends. More important than my career. More important than anything, I chase that feeling that I get when I put that juice in my system. And I'm going to tell you this, that if I had a choice, I would have chose to stop after the first time my mom collapsed to her knees and just looked me straight in the eyes and said, Tyler, please, no. Why you got to do this? Please, no more, Tyler. You're a good guy. Everybody likes you. Please stop. And I swore to God that I would never touch that juice ever again because of what had just happened. And I looked my mom in the eyes and I knew I would never, ever touch it. And the minute she got up and went to work, man, I was across the street at the liquor store. That's what I do. It doesn't matter how many times I promise people I will never touch this stuff. There's something inside me that can always justify it and say it's okay to do it one more time. Or there's something inside me that will justify it and say, you know what, it's her fault anyways. And that's the kind of drinker I am. You know, I'm not here to say, hey, you know, I drank longer than anybody here, or more than anybody here, or less. It don't matter. The problem is that it don't matter how long I go without a drink. The minute I put it in my system, that fire gets lit, man, and I don't know when it's going to stop. You know, I set out, like in elementary school, I won the DARE essay. I was never going to drink in youth. I stood up in front of the PTA in a room full of probably four times as many people, the PTA, the teachers, my whole sixth grade graduation, Officer LaCosta, like my new best friend, and I'm wearing my DARE shirt every other day to school, and I was all about it, and I'm never going to ever drink in youth, and here's why. And I read my essay to the class, and by the following year, man, I was smoking weed, and I'm hanging out at the Boys and Girls Club, practicing graffiti, and drinking on a daily basis. See, my mom, we were a Cypress family the year 1992. She was like hustling. My sister, you know, at the same time, my sister's in her bedroom crying on acid, listening to the Grateful Dead, and I'm at the Boys and Girls Club practicing my graffiti, you know, and I'm, you know, expressing my artistic abilities, and, I don't know where that came from. I don't know why. I'm not here to justify it or say, I mean, I just like, that's just how it ended up, you know. I can't blame it on my mom. It's not like she wasn't there. If she was there, she gave us all the love in the world, but I was called, I mean, I chose that kind of, you know, doing that stuff. So I set out to start checking off my goals and hopes and dreams. I get good grades. I graduated from high school, went away to San Diego State, and I told everybody that I got a big-time football scholarship and, you know, that, you know, I was going to be something big. And the truth was, I went down there my sophomore year, and sex, drugs, alcohol, parties, you know, I saw it all down there, and so that's where I chose to go. And, you know, I'm down there, and, you know, I spent a year at San Diego State. And I called my mom after that year, and I'm crying to her, and I'm saying, I can't do this no more. I don't know what's going on, but I can't keep a drink or a drug out of my body. I cannot show up to class. I can't hang out with the people I want to hang out with. I can't do this anymore. And she said, no sweat. Just come home. She was a social worker at the time. She was getting her degree and trying to be a psychologist and all this stuff, full-time school, full-time work. And so I ran back home. When I got there, she gave me this packet. And it was every single sober living home in the neighborhood, every single detox or treatment center or dual diagnosis program, every counselor, I mean, every resource that you need to get your life back on track, people that would help me with whatever my problem was. She dropped it on my lap. She goes, there you go. And what happened is that she said, you can enroll at Cypress College. You can live with me. I won't charge you rent. You got free food. You got all that stuff. All you got to do is what you said you wanted to do. And I looked that woman in the eyes and I told her I'd never drink and use again. I appreciated her help. And what happened is what I was doing down in San Diego came home with me. And I found myself, you know, I'm going to classes. I get my financial aid check. I take that check. I invest it because I'm also a capitalist pig. And I'm finding clients at the campus, bringing them home. And I have this little business going on at the house. And what I found out is I don't have to go to college. I don't have to get that degree. I could be a big-time businessman sitting on my mom's couch and stay drunk and loaded the whole time. And that's what I did. And my mom would come home after working full-time and going to school full-time. And just heartbreaking experiences. I mean, having to take kids out of houses, you know, and having to just go through this awful stuff that she absolutely did not want to do. And she comes home to a house full of 40 gangbangers, and, you know, I'm doing exactly the same stuff in her house that the other people were doing. You know, I remember one time I thought it was a great idea to grow hydroponics in the garage, and I ran the electricity off the preschool next door, and I come home, and my mom's on her hands and knees. I live right on Valley View in Lincoln, and it's like a busy street. There's cars going by, and she's on her hands and knees, and the garage is wide open, and all my plants are there, and she's just crying. And it was one of those times where she looked at me with those Al-Anon eyes, and she was crying, and she's saying, "Tyler, why do you keep doing this? Why do you have to do this? You have everything you need. You have all the potential in the world. You could get good grades. People like you. Why?" And she's asking me that why, as if I know the answer. And I don't know why. All I know is I look her in the eyes and I tell her that I'm never going to do it again. And then a week later, I come home and she's, you know, got something in my room and got a duffel bag full of stuff open and she's crying. She's, "Tyler, please, why? And one more time, I'm never going to do it again." Eventually, I think an Al-Anon got a hold of my mom, and she got sick of living the way she was living. And she moved to Ohio to go finish her PhD. And it's probably the best thing that ever happened to me. It's probably the one thing that saved my life. But of course, at the time, it was mother F her, what a F and B. How could she abandon me when I most need her? And so I continued to do what I was doing, drinking around the clock, and mixing a bunch of other stuff in, and doing the best I could do to try to get by. Now, I'll be completely honest with you guys. If I could go back to there, there was a lot of good stuff that I absolutely loved. Alcohol hits me in my core. Like, I mean, it hits me like, there's normal people out there that love and friendship and family will hit them like that. For me, it's booze. It hits me like nothing else in this world will ever hit me. I mean, it lights me on fire like nothing ever has. And it's the only time in my life that I feel alive. And so if I could go back to that time right there, I would be there. I would be right there tonight to those good times. I would be right there. The truth is that it turned on me. The truth is that I start waking up or I start having these experiences in my life, and I'm just not okay with it. I'm drinking against my will. Something inside me going, "Tyler, no, please, I don't want to do this. Please don't do this. You know you're going to hurt people. You know what's going to happen. But there's something inside me that has to keep doing it." And I don't know. So through a series of events, I ended up in emergency rooms time and time again, 5150 twice. I got 5250 once for trying to escape while I was 5150. I started getting suicidal. I've seen all these psychiatrists and psychologists. I've been diagnosed manic depressive, bipolar, psychothymic, schizophrenic, clinically depressed, been on neuroglobulin, Defco, Seroquel, Terazinone, lithium, Prozac, the list goes on and on and on. The best pill that ever worked for me was Prozac when I crushed it up and snorted it. Other than that, that stuff never hit me like booze would hit me. Nothing ever like made me feel okay to where I could face life and like be a man finally. And I started showing up in treatment centers. I've done the dual diagnosis, the cognitive therapy, the intensive outpatient program, and I can do 30 days. I mean, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and there's something that happens inside of me. There's something. It's like 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and then I'm watching, and I start looking around. I'm going, "Jesus, all the friends I went to high school with, they graduated. They have degrees. They have houses. They're having kids. They're getting married. Look at all these people. They got careers." And something inside me starts freaking out, and I go, "You know what? I need to catch up with them. Like finally I'm sober and I can be the man I want to be, so now it's time to get, like, do this. So I go full-time job, full-time school, full-time girlfriend, full-time loaded every single time. I get sober 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. I pile all on my plate, and I get full-time job, full-time girl, full-time school, full-time loaded every single time. That's my story. I mean, I could stop right now, and that's my pattern. I end up in an emergency room. They say, why don't you get sober? I try to get sober. I do a program, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, full-time, blah, 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 blah. That's my story. What happened this time is starting to hear voices, starting to see shadow people, want to put the booze down. I'm like, I'm conversation with myself. I'm sweating around the clock. I mean, it's grimy. I have my whole inside that rotted out. I still have medical conditions from the way I drank. I'm throwing up like 7 times a day. There's blood. It's just getting bad. And I've gone to all the doctors and the emergency rooms, and they've tried, they give me like Prevacid or Prilosec. They're trying to treat whatever the acid or whatever's going on inside. And the truth is, I just drink too much. And I can't stop drinking, and so it's scarring me up. And so I end up in the emergency room one more time. They said, dude, you're going to die if you don't change your life. And so I went home and I did what I always did. I made up a list. I don't know about any other list writers in here, but my New Year's resolution, this is probably like 3 months before New Year's, but I got to prepare for it. My New Year's resolution, I'm going to get sober. I'm going to get a new psychologist. I'm going to get on some new medication. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to, like, start writing the list. And January 1st, 2003, the night, this New Year's Eve, we're partying, raging, it's a good one, we're having a good time. I cut myself off at 11:58 because I'm getting sober tomorrow. And the problem is I wake up in the morning, I feel like somebody's holding my head underwater. And I got that, I have to drink, I have to. And so my sobriety date is actually January 13, 2003, which is today. And what happened was, Finally, I woke up. Finally, I was able to get to the treatment center. I went to the dual diagnosis program, intensive outpatient program, got on the meds like I always did, because, I'm depressed when I get sober or whatever, and I got anxiety or whatever the problem is, and so I'm on all these meds, and I'm like, I think I was on lithium, Neurontin, Wellbutrin, and Tirazinone so I could sleep when I got sober. And what I recognized this time is the minute the treatment was over, they said, go to AA. Anybody ever been to treatment centers in this place or sober living homes or anything? Everybody's pushing you into AA. It's like, we're done. We got our hands on you. Pumped you full of meds. We did our job. Now go to AA. Let them take care of you. And that's what happened to me every time. And what I realized is maybe there's something here. I started out the same way I'd already started out. I always started out full-time job, full-time girl, full-time school, like piling on real thick. And finally somebody said, Tyler, what the F does it matter if you graduate from college when you're 30 or when you're 31? What's the difference? If you end up dead in the gutter, your little degree doesn't mean anything. And finally, for once, I heard her. And so what I did is I chose not to go to school that year. And I chose to take a year to get straight and to focus on my recovery. I'm doing what, when you come into AA, what they say to do. 90 meetings in 90 days. Get a commitment. They start down south in Orange County. It's like they want to pump you full of tons of meetings. Meeting, 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 meeting. So that's what I'm doing. Problem is I come home for meetings and my problem's getting worse. I'm full of anxiety. I'm a little more angry. I type in the okay and go to a meeting. I come home pissed. Watching this dude who I lived under a bridge for 3.5 years and now I'm sober and I own Bank of America. And I'm getting pissed. Right? I'm listening to all this stuff and yeah, it's happening to you, but I can't keep a drink out of my face. I can't stay out of these stupid sober living homes or out of detox or out of these stupid treatment centers and you're getting this bitch into life. Well, that's great for you. And my problems feel like they're, the longer I stay sober, the more meetings I go through, my problems get worse. Some people come in here and it's a great fit. You like to hug, you like to talk, you like shaking hands, you like to friend. That's my problem. I don't do that stuff. I would much rather be at home alone with a bottle between my legs, counting my heartbeats. I mean, that's what I do. And so I come in here and I'm supposed to get along with you guys and my problem is getting worse and worse and worse and worse. So I decided that sobriety wasn't going to work for me. I'm going to go, I'm checking out. So every day I come home from the meeting and I write my suicide letter. Dear mom, it's all your fault. You know, that whole thing. And then the next day I go to my three meetings of the day and I come home and dear dad, it's all your fault. And like, so it's like 2 months go by, like 6 weeks go by and I'm writing all these letters. I'm on the medication and I'm still getting suicidal. I'm still getting angry and still nothing's happening. And so what happened is, it's my last day. This is the day that I'm going to pull the plug. I mean, I go in my closet and I climbed up and I pulled down the drywall so I could find the beam and I wrapped an extension cord around the beam because I was going to hang myself. And I went on my porch to smoke my last cigarette and it's raining outside and there's a guy in a wheelchair and he's coming up my driveway. I'm like right on Bellevue and the dude breaks down in my driveway. And there's like something like morally wrong with hanging yourself when you got like a handicap dude broken down in your driveway. So I run out there. I'm like, come on, dude. And, you know, he's like, because it was raining, his tire slipped off the rim and he's stuck there and he's like bent out of shape. He's got a catheter. He's steering the wheelchair with like his elbow. He's got a cell phone in one arm and he can only move one finger to press speed dial. And he's sitting there. So I, you know, go out there. I'm like, I'm crying. And right before I went out on that porch, I'm screaming and yelling. I'm on my hands and knees in my living room. There's no furniture, just an empty house. And I'm on my hands and knees and I'm cussing out God and going, why the F would you get me sober to feel like this? What's the point of it all? Why should I be sober if I'm going to feel like this? And I wasn't that nice. Trust me, it was a lot worse. I go out there, smoking a cigarette, dude's broken down in the driveway, and said, don't worry, calm down. He's crying, I'm crying. I'm going to put you on my porch. I'm going to fix your tire, your wheel. You can be on your way, and I got to go do what I got to do. He starts crying. He says, Tyler, you don't understand. There is no getting out of this wheelchair. I eat, sleep, drink, live in this effing wheelchair. That's it. I'm here. This is my life. I calm down, don't worry. I get a wrench and a screwdriver, start fixing his wheel. He starts opening up to me. We're talking. And he says, Tyler, I want to tell you a story, man. He's my age. He's my age. He said, I want to tell you a story. I was in a car accident, and I was hit by a drunk driver. My mom died, and I've been stuck in this fucking wheelchair every day since. And he smoked a cigarette. He came here light a little blunt, a little swisher, sweet. You want me to light one? He smoked that. We're talking. I go in the house, man, and for once, that fury that I felt, that poor me, why is this happening to me? Why am I sober? Why is it feeling this way? Screw God, why would you put me through this? All those emotions that I was feeling the minute before that I was about to hang myself over, I go into my house and they're gone like that. It's like silence. For once in my life, like my brain shut up, and it's like silence and peace, and I felt okay. And then I start hearing this little whisper. All that stupid stuff that I heard in AA for all these years. You gotta help somebody. You gotta help somebody. You gotta do steps. You gotta help somebody. And I can start hearing it over and over in my head. And it's like, those guys are right. I hate Alcoholics Anonymous, but those bastards are right. And so that's what I did. I came back to AA the next day and I got a sponsor and I said, you know what? I know this stuff is not gonna help me, but I'm gonna do it anyway. And that was my approach on Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, how do you know it's not going to work if you don't try it? And so he challenged me to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's my challenge to anybody here. If you're new, if you're in a sober living home for the umpteenth time, you're back in AA for the whatever time, I challenge you to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's not those 12 steps that we summarize and put up on the board. In our book, it says it. That's a summary. The program is like in long form in our book. There's directions all throughout that book, and he challenged me to put that into practice in my life. He didn't say, I want you to go to the doing meeting. He said, I challenge you to work the program as it's outlined in the book. I said, okay, it's not going to work, but I'll do it anyways. And so I told him that, you know, I'm not an alcoholic and an addict. I'm really just self-medicating. My psychiatrist says I'm self-medicating, so that's, you know, so your little steps probably won't work anyway. And that's what I heard in all the treatment centers, that I was self-medicating, and if I just get the right concoction that I'm on, then I'll be able to, you know, then I'll be normal once again. And so I started showing up. That guy said, I want you to do this, this, and this. I want you to call me on Friday, and if you're done with the work, then I'll meet you on Sunday. Your time starts 10 in the morning. If you don't have your work done on Friday, don't bother calling me because I'm going to put in a guy to take your spot. I said, okay. So I called him on Friday. I said, I did your work. I don't think it did anything, but I did it. I'll see you on Sunday. And then we meet up Sunday. We go through the work, and you say, okay, here's what you got to do next week, you know. And every time he gave me a direction, I would tell him, this is not going to work, but I'll do it anyways. A lot of times I got angry because how, like, childish the stuff sounded, and like he was like he was threatening my intelligence or questioning my intelligence by giving me the stupid stuff to do. I tell him, it's not going to work, but I'll do it anyways. And so time after time after time after time, kept showing up, doing my work. I want to tell you guys that when I, for the new people, for people who have been back in that recovery home over and over again, whatever it is, if you're raising your hand and you're saying you're an alcoholic, you're agreeing to the fact that your brain's going to try to prove this program wrong. That's the news. The news is that if you're an alcoholic, this stuff in our book is opposite of what your brain's going to tell you. And that's what it did. I have a brain that's been trying to prove this program wrong since I got sober, and today's 7 years for me. What I was told is, Tyler, you don't have to like the directions. You don't have to believe the directions. And you don't even have to think it's going to work. All you have to do is do it, and you can still share in the results. And so that's what I started doing. We got through the steps in about 2 months, so I'm about 4 months sober. He said, now you've been sucking this program dry your whole life. You've been sucking this world dry your whole life. Now it's your turn to give back. He said, after you go to a meeting, I don't want you there talking to your friends. I want you there finding the guy who's having a harder time than you. I want you to, I said, but I don't have anything to offer. You don't understand. I'm the one that needs help. He said, I want you to shut your mouth and lend your ear to that guy who's having a hard time. Be a friend of them. Listen to his problems for once. And I started doing that, man. And I started showing up. Even though I knew Alcoholics Anonymous was not going to work for me, I started showing up and shutting up. And I would listen to you. How are you doing today? Man, how about your bills? Did you get your bills paid? Are you able to stay another month? How are you doing? And I started talking to people, and my life started changing. My life is, I've always had license problems, always had court problems, always had relationship problems, always had family problems. I've always had all these problems. And what I've learned is that when I help you with those same problems, I learned how to take care of them for myself. So I didn't have a car. I didn't have a license. And I helped a guy go through the steps to get a license. And then it's like, oh, that's easy. I could do that for myself. And then I learned how to run around and do it for myself. I had this broken down old car parked in my driveway that somebody gave me years ago, and I couldn't pawn it, so I couldn't get rid of it for some reason. So I gave it to this guy, and it was like it changed his life. He was running around. He was filling it full of newcomers. He was getting active in the program. And then a couple weeks later, the same experience happened with me. It came back around to me. I don't know, when I started the men's process, I had my favorite grandpa, who I hadn't talked to for 7 years. When I contacted him out in Colorado, I found out that he'd been battling cancer. He'd had every year just another bout of it for the past 7 years. This whole time that I didn't talk to him and was disconnected from my family, my only family member that I really cared about and respected was dying. And the program and the steps and applying them in my life gave me an opportunity to have a couple good conversations with that man. And now, I don't know about you guys, but like for me, if that's what I get around here, it's good enough. If you're here for cars and money and women and boyfriends and houses and mansions and all that stuff, then I really hope you get it. But for me, if all that I get is a couple last conversations with my grandpa, I'm cool with that. I need those amends. The Thanksgiving before I got sober, my mom was out in California. She's from Ohio. She said, Tyler, I just want to sit down and have a meal with you. I said, you don't understand. I cannot eat, sleep. I can't do anything unless I'm loaded. She said, I don't care. She's bawling. I don't care. You do what you got to do. I just want to sit down and have one last meal with my boy. She's getting all the suicide threats, all the phone calls all the time. So that's what we did. She cooked, and I ran back and forth to the bathroom trying to get okay to be able to sit and look my mom in the eyes. And finally get okay, man. Finally that little knot that's in my stomach unties enough for me to be able to sit down with mom. And I can't look her in the eyes. So I'm sitting right here, and she's over here, and out of the corner of my eye, I see these tears up running down her face and hitting her plate of food. And it's like echoing. Every time it hits her damn, it's echoing. And for once in my life, I saw what I do to people. Finally, I saw what I do to people. See, like, I don't know about you guys up here, but down in Southern California, a bunch of people would run around and say, I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. I paid for my seat here. And what I realized is that I didn't pay for nothing. I stayed drunk and loaded. You know who paid for my seat here? Was my mom. My mom paid the price for me to be lucky enough to sit here today. My sister paid the price for me to be sitting here today. Society paid the price. Every single woman I've come in contact with, they paid for me to be here. Not me. I'm lucky enough to be here. And so that's kind of like stuff that's kind of been slowly changing for me to be able to see stuff in that way. I got really excited about working at Alcoholics Anonymous. I ran around and I sponsored anybody who says yes, or anybody who asked, you know, and answered the questions that I asked them. That was my life for the first couple of years. It was like, I get off work, I'm reading the book with a guy, then we go to a meeting, and then afterwards I'm reading the book with another guy, and on weekends I'm doing book studies down at Skid Row, LA, and then we're doing panels. And for me, it got fun, and that's what I did with my life. I built a strong foundation for those first couple of years. The problem is I hid a little bit in AA. You know, I threw myself into working one-on-one with the drunk, one-on-one, and I recovered, and my life changed, and stuff on the inside changed, and I didn't have the drink problem had been removed. I mean, I didn't feel there was like no alcohol problem in my life. But what I started to see was that there were people that were still paying the price. That me sober, people are still paying. Me sober, I'm still disconnected from my mom. I'm still disconnected from my sister. Still disconnected from friends and family. Me sober, I still am the selfish, self-centered boyfriend. Or, you know, me sober, I'm still a poor employee. And I had to step back and take a look at that. So I've gone through the steps. I'm at a ton of times. And every time something else is revealed. And every time I feel like I grow a little bit more. You know, I don't know, the way it was explained to me is that Alcoholics Anonymous was not these meetings. And I'm going, what the hell are you talking about? I always come to AA and they tell me to go to a bunch of meetings. Right? And what they said is that they didn't have meetings back then. And I go, well, okay, well then it's the book, right? And then they explain to me, they didn't have the book back then. And I said, well, what did they do? They ran around and tried to help another person get sober. And so that's what I've been taught to do, and that's what I try to do. You know, I don't take credit for it. I enjoy the quality of life that I have today, and so I continue to do the work. You stay sober long enough in Alcoholics Anonymous, you eventually fall in love with somebody in the program. It's kind of like that's what happened in my life. We fell in love with a cute little AA, you know, the little AA relationship. I'm sponsoring a million guys, and she's, you know, doing what she has to do to try to stay sober, and she gets pregnant, we're living together, and 2 weeks after the baby's born, she's drunk and loaded, and she's driving our kid around, and, you know, under the influence, and she's hiding it, and eventually I find out, and we have to part ways, and here I am sober, a couple years sober, and I have a 2-week-old daughter on my own, and I don't know how to do that. I don't know about you guys, but in the past, I've had ex-girlfriends. I remember this one guy told me, Tyler, you know, it's just a phase. Once you get married and have a kid, you'll grow out of the phase. So I thought I'd speed up the process. I moved in a girl. She had a kid already. I thought I was like, that's my shortcut. Next thing you know, I'm waking up from these blackouts, and I'm coming up out of these blackouts, and I have a belt, and I'm hovering over this 5-year-old kid, and I don't know why. And all I know is he's looking up at me, and he's crying, and he's saying, Tyler, please, no more. I love you. I love you. Please. He's not even crying. I mean, he's like begging me, and I don't know why I'm whooping him. I have no clue. I'm coming up out of these blackouts, and I'm torturing this little kid, and then I'm falling back in the blackout. And so that's my recollection of being somewhat of a parent. That's all I can remember. So when you give me a 2-week-old kid, I'm scared shitless. I'm thinking, well, that's what's going to happen. And what's happened is that I've become a dad. I've become a father. I wake up. I've changed every single one of her diapers. I was there at every single hospital appointment. I was there when the baby was delivered. I was the first one. I used to read I was told to read bedtime stories to her belly, you know, when she was pregnant. I did all that. I read my daughter bedtime stories every single night. I sing her songs to sleep. I wake up. I get her dressed for daycare. I braid her hair. I'm a dad. I'm a dad in this little girl's life. And for me, that's a big deal. I mean, I was full of rage and anger, and I knew that someday if I have a kid, that kid will get abused. I firmly believe that. And I was scared shitless to have kids. So my life, it's almost like Alcoholics Anonymous has like just changed like the direction that my life was supposed to go. You know what I'm saying? don't know, I can tell you that through the amends process, I mean, it's like everything has kind of straightened out today. When I got sober, I'll tell you this, when I got sober, I was in and out of jail, in and out of institutions, 5150, 40 grand in debt on my credit report, no family connections, no, just everything, awful stuff. Since I've been sober, I haven't hit a woman, I haven't been to jail, I haven't been in a fight, I haven't had to put a drink or drug in my body. I mean, like, there's some big changes. I'll tell you this, that after I worked the 12 steps on the Alcoholics Anonymous, I've never had to take any psych medication. I've been relieved of that. I went to counseling for a couple of years, and I worked with my sponsor, and we went through the steps, and we made sure that things were good, and I'm not on any depression medication today, you know. So for me, this is thank you. Like I said, I'm not like the search and speaker kind of guy, man. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love what it does. I love the results that I get. So I continue to do it. You know, I don't know. I'll leave you guys with this, that my sponsor says that God is in the space between you and me. And the closer I get to you, the closer I get to God. And when I look at Alcoholics Anonymous, that's it. That's our program. When I read that book, basically all it is it says, grow close to God and help his kids. I mean, that's all it is. I'll say this to the newcomers, that it says nothing about our meetings in the book. It says we meet frequently so the newcomers can find the fellowship they seek. So you found us. Now the program is going through the steps and working with others. I'll tell you a little bit about our group that we do. It's like we don't share. We're not like a sharing group. We have a list of panels and detoxes and skid row stuff and commitments and so we show up every Sunday and we go through the list. Okay, this Saturday, on Monday we're going down here. Who wants to go? We're going down to the adolescent treatment facility on Tuesday. Who wants to go? And we're all in a group and we all just sign up for where we're gonna go. Where's the next drunk? Okay, there's some kids down at Touchstone that need some help. Cool, who's going? And we get 10 people's hands shoot up and then we shoot over there. And that's all our group does. We run around and try to do that stuff. I don't know. I think that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
What I meant to say is this is one of my favorite speakers. I hope you enjoy him as much as I did.